are listening to Teacher Toolkit, supporting teachers, parents and students worldwide.
And equally, if I was like in a school where we were just all sort, where we were kind of all from a particular sort of background, you'd want people to actually see and experience and think beyond their own experience.
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance and research-based publications.
This week, listen to Ross McGill, founder of Teacher Toolkit, interview Daniel Stone, graduate of the University of Oxford and product manager at the University of Birmingham. In today's podcast, some of the things we'll be discussing are the top books to read on race, positive aspects of Oxford's education style, and schools' hiring policies towards ethnic minorities.
Hello everyone, this is Ross at Teacher Toolkit, the most influential blog on education in the UK. Today I am lucky enough to be joined by Daniel Stone. Daniel, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Hello.
Could I ask you first of all to introduce yourself to our listeners and tell everybody what you do?
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Daniel Stone. I'm a Brummie. I'm a graduate of the University of Oxford, and I currently work at the University of Birmingham as a product manager.
Now, tell me, Daniel, kind of obviously we're chatting during the kind of, I think it's week 16 of lockdown. Before the pandemic, what could you describe your typical working week?
Yeah, so I think my typical week pre-lockdown, I think was spent mostly around work. So kind of like most people, I would commute. So probably get into the office for about 8 in the morning. And then spend a full day at work, maybe go to the gym or play a bit of football afterwards, and then be back at home for 7. So I think definitely the whole kind of cycle, I think, of life has changed a bit since the kind of
virus. What kind of projects are you typically working on back at the university?
Yeah, so the focus on my projects are on the impact that the university is having within the city of Birmingham and the wider region. So there's both a building project that the university has bought to kind of create a new civic hub for the university. And then there's also something called the Knowledge Exchange Framework, which is about actually recording key metrics in terms of the university's impact and things that they're doing in the civic agenda.
Sure. Now, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to take you back, without offending you, 10, 20 years back to school. I don't know how many.
Say 20.
I don't want to go too far with the decades. But let's go back to your teenage self. You're in your GCSE years. Could you describe yourself as a teenager?
That's a good question. I think I've always been somebody who is quite hardworking and level-headed. I actually recall my school report that I wrote at the end of year 5, and I recall writing that I liked school because of the challenges I faced. So I was probably something I'm slightly unusual, perhaps 10-year-old. But I think that kind of quote summarizes the work ethic that I always had, that I was always seeking to improve and really be the best.
Does that come from your own family or something you've had to learn through your own kind of adversity?
I'd say that I think my family have always instilled really important morals within us, both in terms of being people who had good character, but also people who wanted to work hard. So I think they always pushed us to just give our best in everything we did. So I think I probably use that as a foundation to then want to go off and both give my best, but also to achieve as well.
So describe from that GCSE moment towards Oxford, what happened in those kind of latter teenage years to get into Oxford?
Yeah, so I went to a kind of comprehensive school in Birmingham, which wasn't really ever used to kind of sending people to the top universities in the country. So they perhaps had sent 2 people to Cambridge about 20 years before I studied there, and 1 person, actually, and nobody to Oxford at all in the history. So it wasn't expected that I'd kind of get into somewhere like Oxford. But I think that became an option probably after my GCSEs. I think prior to my GCSEs, I was predicted to maybe get 2 A stars and a collection of A's and B's, and ended up getting 7 A stars and 3 A's. So I think at that point, kind of trying to aspire towards someone like Oxford became a possibility for me.
Great. And so you studied economics?
Economics and management.
Economics and management. So describe, I want to get into talk about race and racism in a moment, but describe just, general Oxford experience.
I think the word I always use to describe it is different, and different in every sense of the word. I think definitely when it came to kind of academics, we were kind of stretched beyond what would be expected in most other universities. So we had to do 2 essays a week. We kind of had tutorials where you're kind of sat face to face with a tutor, and you have to kind of rationalize and reason and talk about your work. So all those things were really interesting and different. But you're right, also from the cultural perspective, Oxford wasn't like growing up in inner city Birmingham, where you're surrounded by people abroad.
So I'll come to that in a moment. If I just go back to the university point, what's the one thing you would like to steal from Oxford and introduce into Birmingham University? What kind of things did they do that you still admire today that isn't yet in place in another university where you were?
I think there are probably the two things. So I think there's tutorials, the fact that you'd have those sessions where it was maybe you and another student and a tutor. And so you're forced to really get used to kind of justifying your ideas and arguments in quite an kind of intense environment. And also the fact that you were within a college environment meant that you maybe had year groups of about 100. So it's a kind of much tighter community.
Right.
But I think both of those things, I think, rely on a kind of certain financial model that just isn't possible within the bigger institution. It's just because Oxford has the smaller colleges, it then allows you to do it in a slightly different way.
Sure. Okay. So I'll come back to kind of some things about University of Birmingham in later on. Now we're talking post George Floyd, tragic death of George over in America. Can I just ask for your initial thoughts, Daniel?
So my kind of initial thoughts in the aftermath were one of heartache. And I think both because you had that incident, you also had a few days earlier, another incident of a white woman in America who had called the police and said, you know, there's this black man who's about to attack me, a black man who had asked her to kind of not allow her dog to run away.
I saw that clip. Yeah.
So I think you kind of had that kind of real sense of frustration about these persistent injustices. And I think for many in the black community, I think, sadly, these events aren't one-offs. They're things that have happened a number of different times over a number of years. And so I think it was a sense of frustration and heartache that once again we were seeing a murdered black person on TV.
And so we first got in touch around that time through Connect Futures, when you wrote a blog post and listed a number of books, and I referenced one or two of them in my own blog about curriculum and future proof. So we'll come to those books that you recommend people read later. But in terms of us getting all beyond the pandemic and actually generally tackling institutional racism, you know, curriculum for kids and all sorts. Can I just explore your thoughts and ideas on that particular issue?
Yes, and I think, I mean, one of the first things that we have to do is to really begin to have these kind of open conversations about things. I think for decades, kind of things have been brushed under the carpet where, kind of from our side as black people, there maybe have been things that we've experienced or frustrations we've had that haven't been aired or given as much time as perhaps should have been the case. Mm. And equally on the other side, there's probably been a reluctance to kind of face up to the reality of things and how institutional racism has really caused systems to kind of relegate certain forms of knowledge or certain forms of truths as opposed to others. So I think as educators, I think you definitely have a crucial role in terms of actually thinking about what you teach, why you teach it, and how you teach it. And I think definitely when it comes to forms of injustice across the spectrum, I think the curriculum has to have a place for airing some of those views. And I think when we think about things that we do in terms of not only kind of PSHE, but also within formal subjects, really kind of critiquing why it is that we teach certain things and ignore certain things from reading lists that could help to broaden people's perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's not a perfect fix, and certainly social media isn't the solution, and often Twitter particularly is a very political forum. But I've seen a lot of school leaders think about their curriculum and their reading lists and, you know, the kind of dead white men type rhetoric, which has been healthy. Could you just reference one or two of the books that you wrote in that blog post, which captured my attention, just for listeners, in terms of what you recommend everyone reads?
Yes. So there's a book called Why I No Longer Talk to White People About Race. which I think a few weeks ago was number one, I think, in some of the book charts in the UK. And I think that's a really helpful summary of both the challenges and opportunities of actually engaging people in some of these conversations. Mm-hmm. Because I think there is also the reality that for minorities, it can sometimes be exhausting and be emotional to kind of have to have some of these conversations. Mm-hmm. And often I think if you're somebody who wants to learn more and educate yourself, there are resources available.
Yeah.
You don't always have to turn to...
And I read that book a couple of summers ago, and I'd probably say it's one of the best books I've ever read in my life.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
And really changed the way I thought about the discussions on race. I actually dug out this morning, I've researched, there's an old BBC World Service story on the first black head teacher in Britain. Her name was Yvonne Connolly in 1969, 50 years ago. And then I looked at the ethnicity statistics this morning, just to double check, and white British head teachers, 93%. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talk about role models in schools and, you know, kind of the institution of people in certain positions. What would be your recommendations for schools and colleges to look at their human resource processes? Yeah. I'm not saying universities are better and more diverse, having diverse people at the top, but you'll have your own experiences at university. But any recommendations, Daniel?
And I think the interesting thing with that question is that that's the same across every sector, whether you're looking in the public sector, the private sector, education.
Yeah.
People seem to have those same issues.
Yeah.
And in many ways, I think we're kind of facing the realities of systems that were put in place with my parents and their generation, because many of my parents' generation, they were told, you know, if you were a male, you know, you could probably end up in a manual type job. If you were like a female, you could be a secretary, a nurse, and nothing beyond that. So actually, I think, in many ways, we're probably too late if you want to see real changes in senior leadership for my parents' generation. So I think for me, if we're going to see a difference in terms of diversity, it's going to be for my generation, for people who have had the opportunity to go into higher education or to pursue their kind of aspirations in other areas. So I think the responsibility, I think, remains with schools to kind of continue to do what they can to mm-hmm. raise the aspirations of their students, regardless of their background.
I'm thinking of some of the schools I've visited in my life. You know, I'm thinking of a very perhaps rural community where it's white British kids that are predominant, and also the staff. What advice would you give for those parts of the country that actually would struggle to recruit anybody, never mind people of diversity? But more importantly, how could they... Again, it's going back to that curriculum question. How can they raise that awareness for those children who aren't immersed in a wide range of cultures?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably the second question is probably a slightly easier one. I think because we now live in a world that increasingly is shrinking, like people travel all over the world, they go to all sorts of different places.
Sure.
So I think actually it's an important part of education to kind of let people know that there is life beyond their own particular experience, and I think that's an important message mm-hmm. to kind of teach. And equally, if I was like in a school where we were just all sort, where we were kind of all from a particular sort of background, you'd want people to actually see and experience and think beyond their own experience. So I think that's probably the second question. On the first question, I think the reality is that ethnic minorities are still, to a certain extent, in the minority within the UK. So is it 85% of the UK is white? So I think often within these conversations, there's almost a kind of implicit assumption that you'd want every other person within like a leadership role to be an ethnic minority, but that's just not borne out by the statistics. So I think we still expect there to be situations where, you know, people are in the minority, but we're just saying that actually the gap between what the stats say that things should be and what things are in reality isn't close enough.
Yeah, it's not proportionate to
how
it plays out. Now, can I just ask you for one more book recommendation from your original list?
Yeah, actually, well, I think this one might not even have been on the list, but there's a book called Natives, which is written by Akala.
Akala, yeah.
And again, I think that's a really kind of excellent book in terms of introducing people to some of the challenges of kind of things related to kind of integration and assimilation. And he probably offers some slightly more radical perspectives on what the solution is.
Right. Well, I like radical. I've been looking at Amber Hirsch recently on my Audible, but I've got Carla saved, and I think I'll start playing it on my bike rides recently. Now, you've written a book.
Yeah.
Tell everyone listening, After Oxford, what's it about?
Yes, so I think for a number of years, I think people have asked me just to kind of share my own experiences, both from kind of getting into Oxford and then what life was like studying there. And it never really felt like the right moment to actually put down my kind of words on paper. But this essentially just tells my story of what it was like for me growing up in a black working class family in Birmingham. What the experience of difference was like being in Oxford. But then also importantly, focusing on life afterwards, because often we focus on the big achievement and then actually forget that there's still life afterwards and life goes on and there's all sorts of things that you still need to do.
And I can see you've just published it, so it's a relatively new...
So it's out in May of this year. But it probably took 2 years in the making of writing, editing.
Right.
So it's nice to kind of have it out there.
I'm just skimming through some of the reviews now, and it's glowing. Five stars everywhere. So having written lots of books, I know the pain that you have to go through.
Yeah.
When it's out in the public forum for people to critique and part with their hard cash. So congratulations on that. I know it's a real hard achievement, and thanks for your book recommendations. I kind of want to come back to the University of Birmingham now. What challenges do you face, again, framing it under admissions, diversity, and your work across the city? What are the challenges that your immediate team have in terms of improving representation?
Yeah, so I think it's probably thinking about that in two respects, both in terms of staff and students. So I think with staff, we're still facing some of the challenges that we discussed earlier in terms of representation, both within academic staff and within professional services staff. So the university has recently been given a kind of bronze award for the Race Equality Charter, which is kind of in which they've outlined some kind of key targets around addressing some of issues around racial inequality. And then on the student side, I think there has been a push both to try to increased access of all sorts of different forms in terms of getting people into the university, but then also looking at their progression. So making sure that we close the BAME attainment gap.
Birmingham's a diverse city. What recommendations have Birmingham been given to kind of move towards silver and gold?
Yeah, so at the moment, because I think they've only recently been given the bronze, so I think they're now working towards that. And I think they'll be judged again, I think, in a few years' time on how well they performed against some of the targets they outlined. I think some of the challenges, because they understand that at the moment, we still have some real challenges that we need to face. I think we don't have the data to suggest that we can get a higher award. So I think the focus is on kind of going from our relatively low baseline to then trying to increase things.
So that's all your HR processes and...
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the immediate front team as well as the auxiliary staff behind the scenes.
Yes, correct.
Now I mentioned before we came online, we've gone past that 20-minute barrier, Daniel. So I'm going to throw loads of quick fire questions and try to grab you off.
Looking forward to it.
So I'm scribbling my thoughts and things, but that reading list that you first recommended has been great food for thought for me personally. So I just want to say thank you. Not only have I got a huge pile of books to read, but a diverse range of books, which is really important for all of us. If I could just finish, before we get into the kind of fun side of things, what kind of is your immediate project priority post-lockdown that you're working on, which gets you out of bed in the morning? What's fueling you at the moment?
Yeah, so I'd say... I mean, I'm quite fortunate, I think, to be doing work that for me is really meaningful and important. So when I think about this new kind of hub that the University of Birmingham is about to create, I think the impact that could have in terms of connecting the university and its knowledge and capital and resources with the city and region is really exciting. So I think for me, I think the exchange is what the project is called. I think it really has the opportunity to really make a positive impact on the region, and kind of definitely gets me out of bed with a smile on my face.
And I'm assuming you've been at home the entire period as well.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
So what, day 115 or something crazy?
I'll stop counting.
All right, so let's ask our kind of interesting question. I'll start with that one then. What any plans for the summer?
Yes, so my family and I have recently booked a week away in the Lake District. So right, that's okay. So we're looking forward to getting away.
A staycation rather
yeah,
than...
Yeah, staycation, yes.
Okay, so let's ask a few more. What book are you reading at the moment?
Oh, I'm reading a book on Malcolm Gladwell called David and Goliath.
Yeah, I know it. Okay, what do you do to relax?
I watch a lot of football, go for runs, try to keep healthy.
Okay. If you, after Oxford in 30 seconds.
Oh, so I need to work on my elevator pitch. So it's before, so it's growing up in inner city Birmingham. It's the challenge of growing up in a comprehensive school and kind of having to survive that environment. It's then having to survive a completely different environment in Oxford in terms of being a minority. And then it's the process of me then finding myself in terms of kind of finding work with meaning and finding my own self-confidence and place.
Okay, great. Are you a Coke or a Diet Coke man?
Coke. If you're going to go for Coke.
Okay. Tips for writing a book?
I think definitely that process of editing. So leaving it for a while, coming back to it, leaving it, coming back to it. And I'd also say, if you're somebody who loves reading, because that will then come across in your writing.
Okay. Tips for any teenagers listening that aspire to be to reach Cambridge or Oxford?
Yeah, I'd say just develop your academic curiosity. So find those subjects or those things that really interest you intellectually. And you do that as you read, as you kind of explore new topics, you'll kind of find those things that really spark your interest.
A new skill you've learned during lockdown?
Spanish. Oh, no, don't test me.
Oh, you got good ammunition there. Okay, if you weren't doing your job, what would be your dream job if you weren't doing that now?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. I think probably definitely something related to consultancy. I like the idea of being able to help individuals or organizations improve and get better.
Okay. What would your family say is your worst habit?
They're probably saying I'm too serious sometimes.
Oh yeah, I get that one. Okay, who would you recommend I interview next and why?
Oh, that's an excellent question. I'd say my older sister, Selena Stone, is doing some amazing work and doing things around both in the space of kind of race and education, but also within kind of faith and how faith communities could become
a lot
better at reaching out and engaging with social aspects in their communities.
Okay, well, have a word with Selena and get in touch. What do you most admire about teachers?
I think teachers do an incredible job. I'm actually a governor at my old secondary school. So I think as part of that role, I actually decided to go back and teach a day of workshops for like a PSHE day.
Right.
And kind of had a kind of interesting experience where some classes are really engaged and interested, but obviously it was a real battle. So I think to be able to kind of go in every day, every lesson, and teach you to a certain quality and keep people engaged and not lose.
Have you experienced any homeschooling at all during lockdown? Have you had to deliver any lessons online?
No, I've not had to. I think I've done one or two like emergency math lessons.
Okay. What's your top tip for skiving off a Zoom or a Google meeting with your teams?
Yeah, the key thing is to put your faith, but to still be present and to actually put your mic on mute. Take off your camera and then go and grab a quick coffee or two.
I think we've all learned that. Okay, final question, Daniel. What do you want to be your legacy?
Interesting question. I think there's something really important about integrity, living life with integrity. and seeing where that takes you.
Great. Daniel, thank you for your time. I'm going to keep a good eye on your work with the University of Birmingham. Hope to get and visit once all this pandemic settles down. And thank you for your original inspiration for me in terms of your book list. It's given me some things to a larger reading list for the summer. Mm-hmm. And I hope you have a good time in the Lake District. It's a beautiful part of the world.
Cheers, Ross. Thank you.
Thanks, Daniel.
No problem.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.